College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go look and dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today, a podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. This is our special Big 12 offseason breakdown. Later in this show, we will be joined by Texas head coach Shaka Smart on the heels of coaching with USA Basketball during the summer of 2016. We will continue our Big 12 breakdown throughout this podcast and want to ask you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. Give us a review. Give us a like. Let us know what you think of a product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also, check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. And one thing that you really can't get enough of is a good shave. And that's why today's show is brought to you by Harry's. For far too long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave or you've settled for a low price but low quality razor. Harry's offers something you've never had before, a great shave at a fair price. Good shave, good price. It's simple. Get the best of both with Harry's. Harry's starter set is a great option. For just $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shaving cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of the show. Harry's will give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code HOOPS. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman Set. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. Enter code HOOPS at checkout to get $5 off and help support the show. Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. And now that we've got you set up for the shaving needs that we always promise you here on the College Hoops Today podcast, let's dissect, digest, and offer some perspective on the Big 12. Now, the one thing we've learned about the Big 12 since the conference went to 10 teams a couple of years ago is the double round robin format makes this league, in my opinion, far and away the most competitive league in college basketball. Last season, 70%. Seven teams from this conference went to the NCAA tournament. And as we forecast ahead into the 16-17 season, the one thing to me that resonates stronger than any other narrative is the same thing we've seen for the past 12 seasons. Kansas is still a cut above the rest in this conference. The Jayhawks have the best backcourt in the Big 12 with Frank Mason and Devontae Graham, and the best NBA prospect in the league in freshman wing Josh Jackson. But another narrative to keep an eye on, 2 through 10 in this league, the 9 teams in the Big 12 after Kansas, is as close as it's ever been. And I really believe that if you took the teams that are picked 3, 4, 5 in the Big 12 preseason poll and flip them with the teams that are picked 6, 7, 8, I don't think any of the coaches in the league, okay, would dispute that notion. One other thing that I think is under the radar in terms of storylines in the Big 12, keep an eye on Texas Tech. Tubby Smith may have moved on to become the head coach at Memphis, but Chris Beard, the head coach of Arkansas Little Rock, inherits a veteran team. There are 6 players back who averaged double-figure minutes on a team last year that went 9-9 in the Big 12 and made the NCAA tournament before it lost to Butler in the round of 64. Texas Tech also adds a couple of key additions. Anthony Livingston, a transfer from Arkansas State, who a lot of people believe was the best graduate transfer on the market last year, and Neam Stevenson, a junior college guard from Seward Community College, who averaged 24.7 points last season in junior college. And one thing that Big 12 coaches have told me all summer, Texas Tech could have, pound for pound, inch for inch, the most talented roster in the league other than Kansas. Another guy that's stocking up talent at his current post is Texas head coach Shaka Smart. He is on the heels of a terrific recruiting class. We visit with Shaka Smart coming up next. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Shaka Smart spent this past summer recruiting and also doing some work with USA Basketball, and the head coach of Texas with 1 year in the Big 12 now under his belt is on the College Hoops Today podcast. And Shaka, how different was your July this year compared to past years?
It was a lot different, John. I was on the road for the first period, went to the Peach Jam, went to Under Armour, went to Adidas, and that was it, because the following Monday we had training camp in Houston for the 18 and under team.
Now, you know, head coaches obviously always want to be involved in every aspect of their program, but recruiting is the lifeblood of any program, regardless of level. What was it like to be detached away from such a critical part of your program?
Well, I don't know that I was detached. You know, with technology now, FaceTime and calls and texts and emails, is very, very easy to stay in contact with your staff. And remember, you know, there was quite a few guys in the class of 2017 that were in the same place we were. So we communicated as much as possible, our staff, and those guys kept me in the loop in terms of what they were seeing, and I kept them in the loop in terms of what was going on down in Chile.
Recruiting is so competitive now, and I'm sure it's much different now, obviously, at the level that you're at versus when you were at VCU. How big is it, not just to be the head coach of USA Basketball, but to have that type of a forum, not just for the honor it is to obviously represent your country, but also to help you and give you another platform that maybe puts you on a different level than other coaches when it comes to recruiting?
Well, you said it, John. Recruiting is extremely competitive, and there's so many people going after so few guys. So I think just finding a way to differentiate yourself, whether it's, you know, coaching a team, or, you know, obviously guys have done that in different ways, you know, with affiliations with different groups. So, you know, for me, just first of all, getting asked to do it is an incredible honor. I've done it in the past as an assistant coach with Billy, and, you know, just so much fun and such a great learning experience, plus the chance to be around some of the best players in the country at that age group was terrific.
The Billy that Shaka just mentioned for our listeners out there is Billy Donovan, his former boss when he was at the University of Florida as an assistant, now the head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder. And, you know, I know that you've leaned on him a lot as a resource in a lot of areas, but I'm sure when you were making the jump to Texas, you talked to him about the aspects of high major recruiting. What's the biggest thing that you learned about high major recruiting during this past year at Texas, your first year in Austin, that you didn't necessarily know when you took the job?
That's a good question, John. Well, I've been an assistant at Florida and Clemson, so, you know, I had somewhat of an idea about, you know, recruiting in top-level leagues. And I think we were getting to the point at VCU where we were at least recruiting against some really high-level programs. I'd say, you know, just probably the biggest difference is there's an even more limited pool in terms of the guys that have that upper talent level to compete at the highest level that you want to compete at, and you look around the conference you're in or the teams that you're competing against, and you see how challenging it is based on the guys that they're getting.
How different is the pressure as a head coach when you're at a place like Texas and you want to sustain a national brand versus when you're at VCU and you want to sustain a brand that, in essence, you elevated when you got the job and you want to keep it really a tier above the rest of the other teams in your league?
Well, I think pretty similar, actually, in that, you know, at VCU, what we were trying to do was just improve our program over the course of time. And I think that had been done even going back several years before we got to VCU. And so we were just trying to build on that. And it gets harder as you build on it more and more because, you know, you're trying to get to that next notch. And recruiting is very much a hierarchy. I mean, you have the people at the very, very top, and then there's several levels. And I think trying to break into that next level can be extremely challenging. Then here at Texas, you know, this is a program that's had a lot of success in the past. And what we're trying to do is, you know, try to get an understanding both first within our program and then externally, you know, how successful this program can be moving forward if we put the right people in place.
Texas head coach Shaka Smart joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Longhorns had an NCAA tournament appearance last year, had a breakthrough season despite an injury to Cam Ridley, which happened in the middle of Big 12 play. They add a top-flight recruiting class, and a couple of members of that recruiting class, James Banks and Jared Allen, were part of USA Basketball. What were your impressions of them, your freshmen, during the experience you had in July?
Well, it was great to get a chance to spend so much time with those guys, because when you're on those trips, you're literally together all the time. And to learn more and more about their personalities and the way that they interact on and off the court was a lot of fun. And then plus for those guys to be together, they were roommates, and personality-wise, they couldn't be any more different, but they really hit it off, and they get along so well. So that was great. And basketball-wise, great to coach those guys because, you know, during the recruiting process, you really don't get that opportunity to get a chance to be on the same team, the same unit with the guys you're recruiting. So that was a good head start for us just to be around them in a practice setting and a game setting, and hopefully that will springboard us into a successful year.
You know, there are certain freshmen that have the ability to go in and change a college game, but they're a rare breed, and I think we're learning more and more that returning players in college basketball are more important than incoming ones. But of the freshmen that you bring in this year, who are you expecting to come in and immediately affect Texas?
All four of them. Expecting them all to impact us. I think they'll impact us in different ways, and never forget listening to Coach K speak at a clinic years and years ago, and he said his advice to his guys is, you got to run your own race. You can't compare yourself to the next guy. So we tell our freshmen that all the time. But I, at the same time, I think they all can impact our program. I think they all are guys that can play good minutes as freshmen. We're going to need them to because we lost six guys off last year's team.
You mentioned last year's team, you lost six guys, and you had probably – as excruciating a loss as any coach can suffer in the NCAA tournament against Northern Iowa, you've coached a long time now. Where does that rank among the toughest defeats you've had in your career?
Oh, John, don't do that to me. I try not to rank the losses because if you get caught up in doing that, then
we're trying to create compelling content
depressed
on this podcast.
No, I know you are. No, it was a tough one because. Not even so much because we lost on a buzzer beater, but just because of the fact that I think our guys really were starting to come together as a group at the very end of the year. We had been through some ups and downs, and we had some great wins in February, but we also had a couple really tough losses. Obviously, Cam was out during that time, and we were trying to get him back, but we just kind of ran out of time. And I think our guys were really starting to figure out how to play for one another. And we got down 16 points in that game, which earlier in the season would have meant a fold up the tent. Our guys did an unbelievable job battling back, taking the lead. And then, you know, Northern Iowa just played great, made that game-winning shot. And it ends so abruptly. I think any coach would tell you that. You know, it's you're working so hard towards something, and then, boom, as soon as that final buzzer sounds, the season's over.
What do you say to your team after that game?
It's tough. There's nothing really magical you can say. I think, you know, anytime the season ends, trying to bring a level of perspective into what just happened is very, very hard because it's so fresh. But I do think that's part of our jobs as coaches. Sometimes it's easier done with individuals or small groups than with the whole team. I think just demonstrating a level of appreciation for the guys in the team, and in that case, specifically the seniors and guys that were on their way out of the program, and helping those guys understand that, hey, you guys have been a part of something special. You're part of something that we're building, and even though you're moving on, you're always going to be a huge part of this thing.
Now, you mentioned guys that were moving on, and this brings me to an interesting dynamic because – we have right now a player that was on your team, Isaiah Taylor, who was a very good college player, who opted to hire an agent and not return to Texas, and then he goes and he doesn't even get invited to the NBA Combine. What is it like as a coach when you see somebody go through a process that might not be the best for his long-term future, and he could still come back and obviously affect your team in a positive light, but you know you can't control it? What is that like as a leader of young men?
Well, I think it's important in situations like that just to remember that decisions like that should always reside with the individual and his family. And so for me as a coach, my job is to play a supporting role in any way that they want me to. And I think a big part of what happened with Isaiah is he nearly left the year before. Mm-hmm. You know, he was probably within an eyelash of leaving after his sophomore year. Decided to come back, And I think, you know, in a big part of his mind, that was going to be his last year. And I give him a lot of credit in how much he invested in our team and in his teammates and in his game during that year. But it was pretty clear in his mind he had made the decision that he was ready to take that next step. And, hey, even though he didn't get drafted, I wouldn't necessarily count him out. He's a warrior. He's a competitor. He's a guy that, you know, was a late bloomer coming out of high school. So keep an eye on him. I wouldn't count him out.
You know, you are undoubtedly, though, going to have to deal with this new rule in terms of kids going to the combine and working out. You're going to have players here at Texas that are going to go through it. I talked to several coaches who went through it when they had players waiting until the middle of May. Are you an advocate of being in this situation? Because, you know, there might be a time that you have a player that's 50-50 who could be a key part in your team, but you're not going to know till 6 weeks after the season if he's coming back or not.
Yeah, you know, I look at it a little bit differently, John. I'm an advocate of whatever is best for these guys. And I actually think if guys don't get picked, they should be able to come back to school. Whatever is best for these guys and their long-term well-being is what we should be focusing on. I think student-athlete welfare and what's best for the student-athlete has become this big you know, thing that's in vogue now, and administrators and coaches want to talk about it. But we need to be about it, and we need to make sure that whatever rules we put in place are really in the best interest of these guys. I think that some of the other sports have it figured out a little bit better than we do. I think it's really important for our guys to be able to get accurate information from the source in terms of where they're going to be able to be picked and what their future holds, at least in the immediate future. And I think that can help guys make informed decisions. But it's our job as coaches to adjust. And, you know, whatever happens, we need to adjust to it, and hopefully we can build a strong enough program that we can still be as successful as we can be. Obviously, when you lose a guy that's an NBA-caliber guy, you can't just go out in the street and replace him. But hopefully you have good young guys and you help them get better over the years.
Well, that brings me to my next question. Who of your perimeter guys or your returning guys in general do you expect to take the biggest step forward this coming season?
That's a good question. I think for us, we have an interesting dynamic because we have three sophomores that all had very good moments as freshmen and made a lot of progress. And if you look at them in the weight room, if you look at them in workouts this summer, they look like completely different people and completely different players. But obviously, what you're talking about is the impact that guys like that are going to make in the game against high-level competition. And I think it's a mistake to just assume that that's going to happen. I coached a couple of guys at VCU that we maybe skipped a few steps after they had successful freshman years and thinking, hey, this guy's going to be an all-unbelievable player. You have to go through the process of taking that next step and that next step. So it'll be fun to watch. I think Kerwin Roach, Eric Davis, those are two guys on the perimeter that probably have been as good as anybody on our team this summer. I would expect them to take a huge jump. Tevin Mack has really done wonders with his body and really worked on his game. We're going to need him to take a huge jump. I think Kendall Yancey is a guy that, as a senior for us, is really ready to take on a bigger role than he had last year, and I'm excited to see what he can do.
Texas head coach Shaka Smart joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. The Big 12 put 7 out of its 10 teams in the NCAA tournament last year. That's 70% of the league. It's easy math right there. You know, I've studied, you know, the league from soup to nuts moving forward, and I think it's gotten better in terms of how competitive it's going to be. I don't know if the teams at the top are going to be quite as good as last year. How much of a gauntlet is the Big 12 now since you've had the opportunity to go through it for a season?
It really is a gauntlet. Now, one thing is, John, every coach says his league is hard. So take what I say with a grain of salt because we are in the Big 12. But there's no question about it. It's a really, really challenging league. And I think what's a little different about it is with only 10 teams, first of all, we're playing a double round robin. So you're not getting away from playing anybody twice. You have to go to everyone's home court, and they're all really tough places to play. And then the next thing being, because of the progress that a lot of the programs have made in this league, there's really no easy game, not even close. So I think you and I have talked about it, trying to predict this league and figure out where people are going to finish. I certainly can't do it. So it's going to be a real challenge, but I think it's going to be an exciting challenge. And for our team, because we're so young, just focusing on getting better from August to September and September to October and so on. By the time we get to January, if we can make that type of growth, I'm excited to see what we can do.
Now, for as competitive as the Big 12 is, there has been one program, Kansas, that has won the league for 12 consecutive years. You led VCU to a win over Kansas in the Elite Eight in 2011, but last year was the first time that you went toe-to-toe with the Jayhawks in conference play, coached at, obviously, Fog Allen Fieldhouse. What about the mystique of Kansas, especially coaching at Fog Allen Fieldhouse, did you learn from last year, your first year in the conference?
Well, I think you're talking about two different things. One, if you want to talk about Fog Allen, talking about probably the toughest place to play as a visiting team in all of college basketball. I've been to Duke, been to Kentucky, been to North Carolina. It's certainly at least tied for first. But then, on top of that, the other thing you're talking about is a great, great team. And last year, the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. And so I don't think there's any mystique at all about that second part, the great team. I think what you're talking about is a phenomenal coach, great, great players, a terrific system, and a program that's had continuity in terms of the coaching staff and guys on that team like Perry Ellis that have gotten better and better and better over time and have led that team. Now it's Frank Mason, Devontae Graham, guys like that. And there's no question that's why they've been so good.
Now, we've talked about Kansas. We've talked about the double round robin. As a coach in the Big 12, when you hear about potential expansion and stuff that could get away from the current format, I know it's not necessarily a basketball-related decision, but what is it like to kind of operate with a cloud like that and uncertainty like that looming over your head?
Yeah, I don't look at it that way at all, John. It's not a cloud. It's not uncertainty. I'm an in-the-moment guy. And, this year we've got 10 teams in our league. We're going to play 9 games at home. We're going to play 9 games on the road. We know who we're playing. And I'm going to focus on that. We try to tell our guys all the time, focus on the things you can control. So I'm just going to try to do what we ask our guys to do. If our league decides to make a change, it certainly won't be for basketball reasons. But if it does, then, we'll be excited about whatever challenge is next. The interesting thing is a lot of the teams that the media is reporting that the Big 12 is looking at are really, really good basketball schools. So the exciting thing would be if they did expand, it's not like you're adding people to the league that don't bring value from a basketball perspective. And you're talking about high-level programs in people like UConn and people like Cincinnati and even BYU. If you've been there, you understand how hard it is to play.
No question. And, I know regardless of what situation you're in, you're going to be sure to, print out all the press clippings that don't give your team the correct attention and notoriety to motivate your guys. But final thing for me, I think when you were at VCU, you relished the role of being an upstart. And now you're at a place that before you took the job, went to 16 NCAA tournaments in 17 years. Is there anything that you miss about being at a place that's more synonymous with being an underdog?
Well, the thing a lot of people don't understand is that was going away at VCU. That was going away really quickly. And, one of the things that was interesting is obviously going into any game, whatever you can use to motivate your team and the guys that are part of what you're doing, you utilize. But as things changed over time there, we became a little bit more of the hunted. And you're still trying to create that hunter mentality, but it became a little bit more difficult just from the standpoint of some of the guys we were recruiting and the way that our program was starting to be viewed even from the outside. So here at Texas, there's certainly none of that. I mean, people would love to beat Texas, and there's certainly a level of motivation for folks to do that. So I think for us, it's about two things, John. It's about caring deeply about what goes into winning, the process for success, and also caring about one another. You know, the people on this team, not just players, coaches, managers, GAs, everyone together, having a level of care and concern and appreciation for one another and what we're trying to do on this journey together. And whether we're the underdog or whether we're the favorite, that really doesn't matter. If we can care about those two things at a high level, I think we'll have a great chance.
Well, Shaka, it's going to be a lot of fun to cover. Appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the rest of August, and I'm sure I will talk to you as we get closer and closer to the start of fall practice.
Thanks for having me on. You're the hardest working man in college basketball.
We'd like to thank Texas head coach Shaka Smart for joining the College Hoops Today podcast. And again, want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast via iTunes and give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, check us out on Facebook at the College Hoops Today fan page. And now that we've just dissected everything there is to know about Texas basketball, let's see where the Longhorns and the other nine teams in the Big 12 fall in the power rankings.
John's Big 12 Power Rankings. Power Rankings.
Kansas is obviously number one at the top, but then the agony begins after the Jayhawks in the top spot. I felt like somebody with a Rubik's Cube when I was looking at the Big 12 2 through 10 because there is nothing but infinite combinations about how these teams can fall. West Virginia, because of their system, because of their head coach Bob Huggins, gets the nod at number two, despite the fact that they lost their two key front court players from last year, Devin Williams and Jonathan Sponge Holton. Iowa State behind Monty Morris, the veteran point guard, is at number three. Texas Tech makes the top four. I have the Red Raiders at fourth overall in their first year under Chris Beard. Oklahoma at five. Baylor at six. Baylor, again, one of those perennial contenders for a top four seed in the NCAA tournament under Scott Drew. Texas at seven. Oklahoma State at eight. Kansas State at 9, TCU at 10. Now, how good is the Big 12 right now? This is one thing I want to point out. The teams that were picked, 8, 9, 10, Oklahoma State, Kansas State, and TCU. Here's a couple of nuggets on each. Oklahoma State may have, pound for pound, the best backcourt in the league, other than Kansas, in Phil Forte and Juwan Evans. Kansas State, a lot of Big 12 coaches think, is a surefire NCAA tournament team. And TCU brings in the highest-rated recruit they've ever had in point guard Jalen Fisher, who was originally committed to UNLV but decommitted when Dave Rice was fired in the middle of last season, and then he decommitted in the spring. Now, my thing is this. If you're going to put one of these teams ahead of somebody, somebody else has to fall back. And the hardest thing when you're forecasting the Big 12 is finding out who is going to fall back. Let's take a look now at the best players in this league.
John's Big 12 preseason first team.
We're going to start with the Swiss Army Knife for the Kansas Jayhawks, Frank Mason. The aforementioned Monty Morris is next. Juwan Evans, an NBA prospect who battled injuries last year, only played 22 games, is also on this team. Josh Jackson from Kansas and Jonathan Motley, a guy who was really starting to look like one of those Baylor bigs that we've seen Scott Drew develop over the past couple of years. Time now to find out who is the Big 12 Preseason Player of the Year.
John's Big 12 Preseason Player of the Year.
It's hard to sometimes do this with a freshman, but I did it last week with Bam Adebayo when we were predicting who would be the SEC Preseason Player of the Year, and I went with Bam Adebayo from Kentucky. Josh Jackson, to me, is the Big 12 Preseason Player of the Year, and he has a chance to be the top pick in the 2017 NBA Draft. Serious, serious similarities in terms of athleticism when you look at Jackson compared to Andrew Wiggins. And now that we've got you set for your best players in the Big 12 and the player to watch in Josh Jackson, which team is a sleeper?
John's Big 12 Sleeper.
To me, it's the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Travis Ford had an injury-riddled season last year in what was his final year in Stillwater. Brad Underwood comes in, 89-14 the past 3 years at Stephen F. Austin. He won two games in the NCAA tournament during that span and was really one possession away from going to the Sweet 16 last year. Forte and Evans could be one of the most underrated backcourts in all of college basketball. Leighton Hammonds is a quality contributor from what I'm hearing from everybody I'm talking to in Stillwater. They love the development of Mitchell Solomon, the big man in the offseason. I think Oklahoma State's got a chance to make a real dent in the conference standings in Brad Underwood's first year in Stillwater. How about some Big 12 freshmen to watch?
John's freshman to watch in the Big 12.
Josh Jackson from Kansas, two other members of the Jayhawks you want to keep an eye on, Udoka Azubuike and also Mitch Lightfoot. We look now at some other names to watch. Three from Texas, Jared Allen, a McDonald's All-American big man, Andrew Jones and James Bank, Jalen Fisher from TCU, Cameron McGusty from Oklahoma, Christian Doolittle from Oklahoma, and Mark Vitale from Baylor. Time now to highlight some transfers.
John's transfers to watch in the Big 12.
One guy that's not getting enough pub nationally is Manu Lacompe, the transfer from Miami. He will be Baylor's starting point guard and probably will be for the next two seasons. Two guys I mentioned from Texas Tech, Anthony Livingston and Neam Stevenson, and also two guys you want to keep an eye on for Iowa State, Donovan Jackson, a junior college prospect, and also Merrill Holden, who comes over from Louisiana Tech. There's a good chance Merrill Holden is a starter for the Cyclones in the pivot. Now let's take a look at some breakout guys.
John's Big 12 breakout players for next season.
Number one on my list is Terry Mastin from Baylor. Scott Drew has always had big men sit out, get better, and really move into a situation where they could be productive. Terry Mastin showed flashes last year. He was not a sit-out big, but now with more minutes, he should take a major step forward. Christian James from Oklahoma. Elijah Macon from West Virginia, to me, is set up more than any other player in the Big 12 to have a breakout year. West Virginia has a serious void in the front court. The time is now for Macon to answer the bell, something he hasn't done with consistency throughout the start of his college career. Kerwin Roach from Texas, and also Deonte Burton from Iowa State. Deonte Burton last year was a lot like a volcano. He could come off the bench and explode at any time. Now Iowa State does not have Jameel McKay and George Niang up front. You're starting to see right now Deonte Burton look like one of those players whose numbers should absolutely spike during the 16-17 season. We'd like to thank Texas head coach Shaka Smart for joining the College Hoops Today podcast. We'll be back next week to preview the Mountain West Conference from soup to nuts. Again, we'll be back. Same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.